Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. When it's time for a new credit card, the best ones do way more than just buy stuff. And that's why U.S. Bank offers credit cards that make every day more rewarding. Earn cash back, score points when you shop, dine out, travel, or binge watch, or get a low intro APR. U.S. Bank credit cards were designed to fit your lifestyle. So make every day more rewarding and check out usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
We are back and we are live. It is Fight IQ presented by RotoWire. Here to talk UFC Prague. Our main event is Jan Błachowicz taking on Thiago Maheta Santos. I won't even mention the co-main event because it is weird. I will say the co-main event on this card is all the DraftKings line value we have to look forward to. And here to break it all down, I am your host of Fight IQ, the Daily Fantasy Sniper, the co-host and analyst. We have Chris Olsen, who you can find on Twitter at RealChrisOlsen, and simply just Joe, who you can find better off on Twitter by the name you probably know him by, at Sun Tzu. Guys, a lot of line value. We have a women's MMA fight to talk about with Joe that I'm actually really excited to talk about because I have a pretty strong opinion on it.
Two women's fights.
One I have a really strong opinion on. Mm-hmm. Bunch of line value to look at. I already have my hot take queued up. There's going to be no hesitation for me on my hot take. I think our boy Zelda will be proud. That being said, overall, Joe, how do you like this card from a DraftKings perspective?
I think, look, let's just backtrack a little. I did okay last week. Obviously, I couldn't decide going into the last fight who I needed more, in Gano or Kane, because I was riding one of those waves where I was up the entire slate, and I didn't know if I would lose or win with either one of those guys. So I think it worked out with Ngannou. I made money. I didn't take down anything major, but I got back in the black, which was good. I think from a DraftKings perspective, this card offers some really good value. I mean, there's at least one guy at the top who is fadeable, not because I think he's going to lose, just because I think the matchup is perhaps not the greatest for DraftKings, but you know, you mentioned incredible line value, and I'll let you cue it up. I put a teaser out there that I've seen something on this slate that I have never seen since I started playing DFS MMA, and I'll leave it up to you, Sean, as to when you want me to give that away.
My guess, I'm going to guess, and we haven't talked about it.
Okay.
We haven't talked about it. I'm going to guess, is it that you can make a lineup with six favorites on it?
That's happened before.
I can't remember.
You're on the right track, but that has happened before.
All right. Well, we will. You know what? We will. If it comes up organically, bring it up. Otherwise, we'll do that.
Yeah, we'll go over a couple of fights, and then I'll let people. I just don't want our mass viewership to shrink once I give away this little tidbit. So,
all right. So we will save that. We'll make that part of the hot takes right before the hot takes. Chris, are you gonna go wild picking underdogs this week? There are a lot of live ones.
I don't know about wild, but I do think that this card is pretty interesting. I'm gonna echo Joe's sentiments a little bit. I think this is a really interesting card, a good DK card to get your feet wet on. I think I like it more than the last 3 or 4 weeks. I think each of those were pretty challenging in their own ways. I think this one's a little more forgiving with how live some of the dogs are. But before we kick off, I just want to mention that I will be playing in my head-to-head round of the DFS World Cup this week.
Ooh, nice.
And I know. Thank you. I will be playing against, I don't know if I would call him a regular viewer, but I have seen him in chat before, Miley Virus. So if you're watching, I guess you get to have all my techniques free for this week. And good luck if you are watching.
Miley, wow, you could have Miley's abstained, Chris. Player. You could have abstained this week. You know, we could have.
Oh, no, that I would never upset my adoring public that way.
Okay.
Miley's a sharp player. So good luck to both of you. And somebody already in Twitter on chat said they have a hot take ready. But you know what? You can save that, Otto. We'll all do hot takes together.
Oh, Otto! Chat. Otto's the man. Otto is. You think I'm the chick whisperer? Otto is a guy who really likes women's fights pretty much more, except for Robert Whittaker. He went to Australia to see Robert Whittaker, and Robert Whittaker didn't end up fighting. I feel so bad for the guy, but he's like me. He watches Invicta and UFC.
I'd be bleeping furious.
Yeah, I know, right?
Let's get into some fights. Enough of the intro, except for I have to acknowledge our great sponsors at RotoWire. Make sure to go to rotowire.com/free. Check out all their premium content for 10 days, no credit card required, daily fantasy season long, all sports from NBA to soccer to MMA to NHL, MLB coming up. Check out all their great content over there. Now let's break down some fights. First up, Demir Ismagulov, 9,200, taking on Joel Alvarez at 7,000. Ismagulov -290, Alvarez the comeback +260. Ismagulov, somebody I'm very high on. Joel Alvarez coming out of the I was going to make a joke and say highly touted, but it's I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea. The horrendous Spanish regional scene. Chris, we'll start with you this week. How do you have this fight?
Yeah, this is the only question you're going to ask yourself here is Magulov is going to, will he be worth it? I think, you know, there's a, if you never saw Jose Alvarez fight, first of all,
Joel, don't even know his name,
Joel Alvarez.
And if you have seen him fight, you've seen it on shaky cell phone camera footage.
That's true. But also if you haven't, you're one of the lucky ones because, you can save yourself a lot of time and just look at his Sherdog page or whatever your Tapology or whatever you prefer, because you could get a lot of information about how he fights just by looking at his, the way he finishes his fights. He's got 14 subs, I believe, out of his 15 wins. And if you go down, it's all like guillotine choke, triangle choke, Darce choke, just over and over and over again. And the reason for that is he gets taken down constantly and then just tries to, you know, hit some opportunistic submission. Now, as Sean referenced it, I mean, I'm sure that works wonders on, the AFL, the scene that he's on there. But I don't think it's gonna play particularly well against this master of sport Ismagulov here, who's a good solid wrestler. He's good. He's got good stand up. He keeps distance well. He throws in combination. As I said in my open, I think the price is a concern here, and the reason I say that is because I wouldn't be surprised if this looks pretty similar to the Alex Gorgis fight. And even in that fight, when he got takedowns at will, he really didn't do all that much in terms of scoring. I believe he got like 84, and the price is similar here. So be aware, but just for if you're just looking for, you know, comfortability in your first pick, get your foot in the water. I think Ismagulov is, you know, almost assured to win.
Now I'm nervous, but I have a ton of Ismagulov. Joe, how about for you?
Yeah, I mean, look, I got into a friendly debate with someone in DFS Army Slack the other night, and they're like, well, wow, look at all this guy's, you know, look at his submissions. And I tried to explain to him, and I think it's worth it's worth, you know, going off chart for a bit, that, you know, the kind of chokes that this guy gets is not indicative of someone who is a master technician in BJJ, right? You know, the triangle, the rear naked chokes. I mean, there's no arm bars in there. There's no like leg lock. There's nothing like outside of them. Those are typical chokes that you're going to get against fighters in a regional scene who, you know, their day job is like, you know, barista at Tapa bars, right? So yeah, okay, let's look at the record and say, okay, the guy's like 14-1 or 15-1. This is a Dagestani wrestler that he's facing. Now, I don't think that the wrestler is going to be afraid of this guy's jiu-jitsu game off his back and not go for takedowns. I would be shocked. So I would expect plenty of takedowns and decent grappling points. Obviously, you know who I'm picking here. Have a share of Alvarez if you like in mass entry GPPs, but I would be very surprised if he actually won.
All right, let's go on to Rustab Khabilov, 8,700, taking on Diego Ferreira. That's right, it's not Carlos Diego Ferreira, it's just Diego Ferreira. Khabilov -145, a little bit odds value here on Ferreira as the line is closed up. He's +135. Ferreira, BJJ specialist, but is coming off two straight knockouts. Rustab Khabilov is a decision machine who recently stole a decision and the job of Cajun Johnson in Russia last time out. He lost that fight. I will argue to no end that Cajun Johnson won that fight. And I don't like Cajun Johnson. It's just a shame that that's how he lost his job because the UFC hates him and cut him. So we'll move past that. Stylistically, is he going to want to take this down? I'm not so sure. And if this fight ends up on the ground, Tejeda is live to the sub with his BJJ. He's got more volume on the feet. His hands are improving. He just needs to not get knocked out. And Ferreira is one of the two underdogs I'm picking on this card to win straight up. So give me Diego Ferreira at 7,500. How about for you, Joe?
Well, I mean, I posted on Twitter that I actually bet a parlay with Ferreira in it before I even saw the DK salary. So that gives you an indication of the direction I'm going in. Now, it should be mentioned that he did miss weight by 1 pound, which I generally don't like to see. I like to see guys who miss weight by a lot because that typically means they just said, you know, what the F at some point and didn't really, you know, kill themselves to get it off. Usually when you're missing by a pound, you tried to make weight. So that does concern me a little bit, although there's been an unbelievable record of guys who missed weight and ended up winning. I should say guys, fighters.
It is starting to curtail. It's gone the other way the last couple.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. So I still like I'm going to still call him CDF just because it's a great abbreviation. I still like Diego Ferreira here. I'm picking him for the upset as well. I'm not sure. You know, he did struggle a little bit against Nelson in the first round. Nelson, maybe he had an adrenaline dump and just went all out, realizing he didn't have three rounds of cardio. But Nelson didn't look horrible against him in the first round. And then Ferreira kind of got his shit together and, you know, that ended up, he ended up doing okay there. So I'm going to go with Ferreira. I think it's going to be a highly contested fight. I'd be surprised if it ended in a finish. So I'm looking kind of at a decision, but I think there's obviously value at his price point. So I am picking the dog as well.
Chris?
Yeah, one thing to note here right off the bat is that if it does finish, it probably won't be Khabilov's win. Just looking at his scores in the past, I don't know, however many fights, we have 54, 62, 71, 52. He's got a 102 in there, then an 86 win, then a loss, then a 66 win, and then a 97. So this is not a guy who is good DraftKings fighter anyway, even if you like him. The reason for that is he's more of a control grappler on the ground, and on the feet he's a slow kickboxer. I'm picking Ferreira too. The reason why I think that he had trouble with Kyle Nelson is that I think he has trouble with combination punchers in general a little bit, because it looks to me like he sort of just tries to always throw back after the first punch and doesn't get himself out of the pocket and then gets hit with the second one. He's not going to have that problem here with Khabilov, who is just a really slow one-shot counter fighter. And I think he's basically going to be able to have basically all his own way on the feet. On the ground could obviously be an issue, but as you said, Sean, active guard game. Cajun Johnson was at least active enough, you know, with leg locks and what have you, to create sweeps and scrambles and get back to his feet. Khabalov had some success in the second round, but overall, you know, there wasn't a lot of great control there. I actually think all those things together makes this a pretty favorable matchup for Fahea, so he's my pick as well.
Wow. Three underdogs.
All right, let's go to Michel Prejeras, the most expensive fighter on the card at 9,400, taking on Ismael Nurudiev at 6,800. Prejeras minus 405, Nurudiev plus 360. Chris, you're up first in this fight. Please don't overcomplicate this. We only have an hour here, so let's speed through this quick one.
Well, this is another fighter where you can basically find out a lot of what you need to know about him by looking at the way he finishes his fights. If you look at him, a lot of his fights are like spinning high kick and then punches, kick to the body, and that's basically the kind of fighter that he is. He likes to pressure you in, and he likes to throw kicks at you. And he'll throw some straight punches, whatever, but that's basically his game. He's not even really a counter fighter per se. He just sort of pressures you in and tries to create that offense, but he does it very slowly. He's another guy who gets put on his back a lot. And for that reason, I like Prejeras here a lot. I don't think his opportunistic subs are going to come through either. I mean, I don't know if you could even fit your legs around Prejeras' neck, let alone triangle him. So I don't know if that's going to be an issue. And I just think Prejeras is pretty much better everywhere. I mean, he's not really a committed finisher, but we saw beyond a shadow of a doubt that the power came with him in the last fight against Bartosz Fabinski. I'm already going on too long. I can feel Sean grimacing over there. So I'll just say that I'm picking Prejeras by finish, and I think he's pretty safe here as well.
The one thing I'll add is that the only thing is that does Prejeras lose focus because he was supposed to fight Rustam Emiev. I think that's his first name. He's supposed to fight Emiev. That was going to be a really good fight. As long as he maintains focus, he should beat Nurudiev. Joe?
Yeah, I mean, look. This is – I would almost would rather have had the UFC scrap this fight. I mean, you've got a short-notice replacement making his debut in the UFC, fighting a guy who's got one of the longest win streaks – you know, in the UFC, makes absolutely no sense. I mean, I don't understand, like, could they really not find anybody better? I mean, there always seems to be guys willing to step up on short notice. You know, you have to go with that's the concern. I mean, is Prejeras going to underestimate this guy? Maybe he kind of eased up on his training. I hope not. I mean, this guy's a professional. He knows what's up. The only question is, you know, will he earn his 9.4K salary? And I think in all likelihood, unless this guy is better than I and maybe others think, I have to put him down as a pretty solid play in both cash and GPPs. I mean, much better than, the guy directly below him. So I am all in on Prejeras here. I probably will probably be one of my higher owned guys in that 9K plus range.
I don't want to oversell it, but just really quickly, even if he underestimates him, I don't even know if that's going to be – I mean, the guy just has no real tools.
Right.
and Prejeras is old.
I guess overestimate meaning that, it ends up being a decision instead of like an aggressive finish.
All right. That's fair enough.
All right. Let's talk about some line value. Polo Ray is 8,800 taking on Demir Hadzevic. At 7,400, this line has flipped and then some. I want to get the most accurate line on this one. Give me one second.
It's actually -140, right?
No, it's coming. It's leveling back out. We now have a pick'em.
Really?
Yeah. At some books, it's -110 apiece. Five Dimes is -115 +105. Another book, Pinnacle, is -125 +100. So Demir Hadzevic was a bigger favorite. He's still a favorite, and he's still 7,400. Guys, Demir Hadzevic should be 1-3 in the UFC. He's 2-2 because he got a third-round knockout over Marcin Held, where in a fight he was getting the ever-living you-know-what beat out of him. And then he had split decision win over Nick Hines. And now he's a big favorite here against a guy who I know he hasn't fought good competition, but he's 4-1 in the UFC. He's been in there with James Vick, has good hand speed. Someone explained to me why Demir Hadzevic is going to be about 75% owned in cash games, probably. Joe, we'll start with you.
Okay, so it's really – Reyes is a very inactive fighter, okay? Yeah, obviously, everybody knows Reyes from that fight of the year against, you know, the fighter formerly known as Maestro Dong Young Kim, now Dong Young Ma, who fought last week and got lit up. Everybody knows him kind of from that fight, but he hasn't been very active. This is pretty much a home fight for Demir. You know, if he was ever going to get a decisive win, this is sort of his fight to get a decisive win at. You know, I don't know what Pollo Reyes has been doing and how he has been supporting himself, you know, fighting on average once a year. You know, that's his business, but I see the line value. I also saw some people on Twitter, you know, bet this aggressively, you know, when not everybody even had a line out on this. So I get it. I see the line value. I am going to pick Demir here as well. I do think Reyes, especially in mass market, his prohibitively high price is going to make him very low owned at 8.8K. But he does have an aggressive fighting style, which could lead to a finish, perhaps early. So I would advise maybe picking a few shares of him in mass entry, but I'm going to, again, go with the dog here.
Chris?
Well, I would agree with that last point. And Joe, Otto in the chat brought that up as well, that would it be a good, you know, game theory play to have shares of a good, aggressive, powerful fighter like Reyes? Because no one's going to be on him. I would say yes. I know Joe likes doing that. That's one of my favorite things to do too. I don't know about it here just because I actually like Hadzevic a little bit here. His last fight against Nick Hine, he was really showing a nice stiff jab. And
he went to split decision against Nick Hine.
He went to, but it shouldn't have been. It shouldn't have been. It was because the Germans love Nick Hine, I guess. But he was showing a nice hard jab. He was throwing a combination. He's a decent counter puncher. He's pretty quick around the octagon. I love that jab in this matchup because I think that Pollo Reyes likes to get in and throw in the pocket, and I think that jab could sort of keep him on the end of range. Now, if they get into a firefight, of course, I like it way less for Hadzevic. We already saw Hadzevic knocked out in something of a firefight in the UFC against Taisimov. So, you know, we know he can be hurt. We know that a good, aggressive, powerful fighters can get to him. I just think that jab and those kicks up the middle as well are going to be good range tools in this matchup. And I like Hadzevic to take a decision. But you know what? I wouldn't rule out stoppage here either. We know that Pollo Reyes can be stopped. And Hadzevic seems like a powerful dude. So, yeah, there it is.
He's powerful, but it's always got Hadzevic, by the way, 2.6 significant strikes landed per minute. Not very active. I can't read Pollo Reyes' numbers because it's skewed a lot by that one, the one Dong Young Ma fight. But he's a relatively inactive striker. Somebody in chat just mentioned Reyes' chin worries. I get that. That's a legit concern. I think Pollo Reyes wins out because of his hand speed. But an interesting fight with ton of line value here. Although it's slowly going away. I'll see what it is come tomorrow. But either way, Hadzevic will have value. Let's go to Jillian Robertson, 8,600, taking on Veronica Macedo at 7,600. Robertson minus 155. Comeback on Macedo plus 145. Chris, break it down.
This is a spot where I expect Robertson to be popular again. And I'm not saying that I love Macedo here, but I don't get why people love Robertson quite so much.
Because she grapples. There's your answer.
I get that part. But, I mean, she got two quick subs against Whitmire, and then she got one against
Molly McCain.
Yeah. So not the best grapplers. And then the first time we see her in there against somebody who could compete with her in grappling, what happens? She gets subbed. So,
but how does that apply to this fight?
Because Macedo has a brown belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And she goes for opportunistic submissions. I mean, granted,
her sub game isn't strong, man.
They're mostly, huh?
Her sub game isn't very strong.
Well, I mean, look, it's there. I mean, she goes for opportunistic stuff like leg locks and stuff. I don't know what that's going to do, but we've already seen Jillian Robertson guard subbed. So, I mean, I can't say that it won't happen. I like Macedo's movement on the feet. I still think that it lends itself to takedowns because she sort of sticks her leg way out there. So you would think that single leg would be available to Robertson. I'm not even saying I dislike her. I just think that she's so limited on the feet. And I think people are overestimating her BJJ. I mean, she's not bad. What I actually like about her is she's very good positionally. Like she's always looking for that better position and always looking for that choke. But I just don't know if her skills are up to what people have been chatting it up for. So I'm picking Robertson. I'm just saying, you know, there is danger here. I mean, she's not somebody to trust 1,000%, but there you go.
I like Robertson quite a bit because Macedo's been taken down 5 times in her 2 UFC fights, and it was finished by Ashley Evans-Smith. So I like Robertson a bit, but let's go to the women's MMA expert on the podcast, Joe.
Well, look, I do think that this is probably a more favorable matchup for Macedo than she's had in the past. However, I like Robertson here. She's 23 years old. She trains at American Top Team. Against, you know, Mercedo, who trains at, I think, the MMA factory in France. At least that's what's on her Tapology page. And for some reason goes out with Roundtree. But above and beyond that, I do think that Robertson is improving. Obviously, there's killers at ATT for her to train with. I was a little bit surprised in her last fight. Interestingly enough, I believe Mercedo has got a higher belt in BJJ than Jillian Robertson, although we all know there are variations of belt quality. So for whatever that's worth, but I like Robertson here. I think she will ultimately find her way to a submission. The one thing to be cautious of is if it does go the distance and you don't get the submission, you're probably, the ceiling is not going to be very high. So again, this is a finish, or she's going to have a fairly low floor, and at 8.6K, it's highly likely that if it goes to decision, that Jillian Robertson will not earn value. So I would say have a few shares of Masato, but I like Jillian Robertson here to bounce back.
All right. Chris Fishgold, 9,000, taking on Danny Tamer at 7,200 in a fight that I think is pretty much a GPP fight here. The odds on it, by the way, are Fishgold minus 235, Danny Tamer plus 215. Joe, break this one down.
So Fishgold admitted that he had a bit of octagon jitters in his last fight. I mean, this is obviously a guy who was a killer in the UK. This is a perfect fight for him stylistically. I do agree with you that this is likely a GPP fight. I do see him getting the finish here. Salary is fair at 9K. Probably has the best inside the distance odds, I believe. Definitely picking Fishgold here. I hope he's gotten over his octagon jitters. So I am going to pick him here. And I would recommend him more as a GPP versus a cash play.
Chris?
All right, so it looks like we're getting spammed in the chat here. Sorry about that, guys. I don't know why the filter is not picking it up. But event, just hanging out with us. I don't know. It's some guy posting links in Spanish. I don't know what it is. But as far as this fight goes, I thought Fishgold actually looked pretty good against Calvin Kattar. I think he was basically winning that fight until he lost it. He's got a really overpowering style. He likes to march you down and sort of throw hooks at you. That fight, actually, the Kattar fight, we actually saw him use a jab a little bit. We saw him counterpunch a little bit, so we saw that he might be adding stuff to his game, which is an encouraging sign. The thing about Tamer that even if you don't like Fishgold, makes it hard to pick him, is he's just a very limited striker. He wings big overhands. He throws kicks. But the reason why he gets so tired is he just throws everything to every shot. And it's not even like the clever shots. They're not set up. He just goes for broke on every shot.
And he got submitted by a Golden Gloves boxer.
Yeah, well, that's true. But that's probably because he was so tired.
He was so tired, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, does he have the power to finish this fight? Sure. But, I mean, I don't think you can draw a lot of parallels between a guy like Calvin Kattar, who's a sharp boxer, who's got a lot of range tools, who knows how to finish, who's got some pop too. I mean, they both do, which I guess is the comparison. But I think Calvin Kattar is a much different and much better fighter than a guy like David Tamer. And so I think that Fischko probably wins this here. I don't know if he gets a finish. I would have to see. We have to see how he responds to actual takedowns, because that takedown finish that Joe alluded to was off a trip. So we don't know about that. But long story short, I'm taking Fischko to win this because I just can't trust Tamer to A, not get tired, or B, you know, have enough tools to go to war here. But, you know, it's probably a good GPP play if you're making a bunch of lineups, but the pick is Fischko.
Yeah, Fischko likes to get in wars, and Tamer throws everything into every shot. I think this one ends in a finish, regardless of who you're picking, but I'm with you guys. I'm on Fischko. All right, next up, Carlo Pietrasali Jr., 8,200, taking on Dwight Grant at 8,000 odds on this one. Pietrasali, minus 145, a little bit of odds value in the mid-range here. Dwight Grant, though, at 8,000. This is a fight I've been going back and forth on. Ultimately, I'm picking my quick breakdown just in terms of picks, and I'll let Chris give the analysis here, as I think Pietrasali is my pick to win the fight, and Dwight Grant is the better DraftKings play, especially in GPPs. Chris?
So, yeah, I was talking about this fight a little bit on Twitter. It's just amazing to me when you watch that Zach Otto fight that he could have basically taken over the fight whenever he wanted, and he just chose not to do it. At one point in the first round, he actually has Otto on the ground. Otto, I think, blocked the strike, and it was still powerful enough to send him to the ground. And he just lets him up to do what? Nothing, I guess. Stare at him and hope he throws so he can counter. That's what he is. He's the ultimate counter striker. In his contender series fight, he had a guy who was very willing to lead at him. So that fight ended in a knockout. Pietrasali might be willing to lead at him too here. But I think the reason why I'm picking Pietrasali is, there's this voice in my head that's like, Dwight Grant is so powerful and explosive, he's going to catch him and knock him out. But I think I'm going to ignore that, because I think, like, logically what I see happening is Pietrasali is a guy who likes to pressure and use his kicking game. And so what I think is going to be the most likely outcome is Pietrasali just keeps him on the end, keeps him on the outside with those kicks for most of the fight, and probably picks him apart in a decision that way, and sort of integrates his wrestling and sort of has a whole thing going. Dwight Grant can obviously catch him, and I expect that he'll be very low owned, because I expect many owners will be sour on him because of that last performance. So if you like it in GPPs, go for it. I mean, the potential is definitely there. I don't think he can be trusted. I like Pietrasali's game a little better. That's who I'm taking.
Yeah, Dwight Grant, the things with him is that after the Zach Otto fight, got a lot of power, usually pulls the trigger. Hopefully he gets over that. Could have been octagon jitters as well for him. What's interesting is that, to me anyway, Carlo Pietrasali Jr., the way I'm barely picking him is he got knocked out by Alex Oliveira. Yeah, he was thrown in the deep end, but Alex Oliveira changes the lives of some of these dudes. You should go back. I've done the exercise previously. Go look at the fights Alex Oliveira has had, watch the guys he's knocked out, and then go watch their next fight or next couple fights, or in some cases, he's retired guys. Ryan LaFlair, there's another one. KJ Nunes, maybe? Somebody like he's retired people. Like, dude hit so hard, people don't seem to be the same. It's just some extra narrative. It could be coincidence, but he's also coming back from a knockout. So that's why I like Grant and GPPs. But ultimately, I do think those kicks on the outside will be an issue. Joe, how about for you for this
fight? Yeah, I'll be honest. I haven't thought a whole lot about this fight. There's just so much more value, odds above and below. However, you know, it could be a sneaky fight to target for game theory. I could see both of these guys. I mean, usually when you see guys at 8.2 and 8, you know, it's a fight to target, because, you know, there's some doubt as to, you know, what side is going to win, and people expect equal ownership. And that might be true here. It's just there's so much more value on this slate that I don't know that this fight will be that highly targeted. You know, with that said, you know, Grant has got knockout potential. I'm still going to go the other way here in kind of a sloppy type of decision, low scoring. I will have shares of each guy, but I'm not going to be overly exposed to the fight as a whole.
All right, Magomed Ankalaev, 9,100, taking on Clinton Abreu. The odds on this fight, Clinton Abreu is the dog, plus 180. Ankalaev, the favorite at minus 195. Another Dagestani wrestler. Joe, how do you have this one?
Look, I'm surprised, you know, that this line is not a bit wider, frankly, unless it's semi-recency bias here. Obviously, Ankalaev is the guy who...
That's what it is.
With 1 second remaining, tapped out to... you know, the Bear Jew, Paul Craig. I still question like what is Russian for there's only 1 second left, don't tap? Because I can't imagine like his corner once they saw him, you know, in the submission hold, like didn't yell, like all you gotta do is hold on for 5 seconds.
Yeah, I said this on my podcast. I give him a pass on that because unless you've been in a triangle choke or like you're not hearing. Now, he should have the fight IQ or maybe, say, the toughness to let himself go out. But once you're in that spot, you don't hear, you don't think right.
I get it.
It's different. I'll give him a pass on that.
I mean, is this guy Abreu, is he a short-notice replacement as well as making his UFC debut?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I don't understand the matchmaking then. I'm going to pick Ankalaev here, obviously. I think he's a pretty good fighter to target. Both in GPPs and cash.
Chris, how about for you?
So when I first looked at this fight, the first guy I looked at was Clinton. And I said, hey, here's a promising looking dog. He's got, you know, he's got decent wrestling. He's a really good jiu-jitsu player. He won't get killed if they have to have a kickboxing match. If he can come forward, you know, he's got pretty decent hands. He actually counters pretty well, which is amazing for like just a straight jiu-jitsu guy. But if you're thinking along those lines, if you like Clitson, and I know we have someone in chat who wants all of the Clitson, Otto wants all of it. So I don't know if this will change your mind or not, but I think you should probably go, and you can find it on YouTube, watch his fight against a gentleman named Bruno Enrique Capozzola, who was, I think, the last fight he lost in Jungle Fight. It's on YouTube. Just type in their names. Bruno Enrique is a come-forward striker who's a good wrestler. So what happened there? Well, he pushed him against the cage, pressured him, stuffed his takedowns, and ultimately wore him down and knocked him out. And I could see this fight going the exact same way with Ankalaev, if not stuffing every takedown, then at least creating scrambles good enough to get back to his feet. And I think Clinton really needs to be the one applying the pressure in order to be successful. I don't think he's going to be that here. I think Ankalaev is going to take that away from him. And I don't think he fights as well backing up. I said he could counterpunch a little bit, but, you know, it's certainly not something he wants to do. And I think that Ankalaev is just going to be he's got the faster hands. He's going to be, as I said, pressuring. And I don't think Clinton is going to be able to reliably get takedowns. So I think that spells a Ankalaev knockout.
And to me, Abreu is one of those Brazilian guys, slightly inflated record, has fought at heavyweight, heavy hands, but relying on the sub. I don't like guys who are just relying on the sub. If I'm going to take a shot, yeah, for me, I'm not on Abreu here. Someone in chat did mention, thanks to Gerwin, not short notice, but Abreu is replacing Darko Stosic.
Yes, who beat Jeremy Kimball in his first fight.
Yep. That would have been a much better fight.
You know, we're going to mention Jeremy Kimball another time on this podcast, which is
for Pizzow, yeah.
Yeah, I can't believe we're going to do that. Anyway, Peter Yan, 9,300. John Dodson, 6,900. I mean, Joe alluded to it before, but I don't think it's any secret. This is the high-priced fighter on the card who is super talented, but probably not a great DraftKings play this week unless you want to just go – under own in game theory. Peter Yan minus 290, Dodson plus 260. I don't mind Dodson as a cash punt. He doesn't get finished. In and out movement, perennial gatekeeper, should land 50 to 60 strikes. I mean, there's you might not need it because of all the odds value on this card, but yeah, not much interest in Jan, though I do think he wins and cracks the top five in this division, if not after this win, very, very soon. Chris?
Yeah, I think this fight is pretty straightforward as far as what you have to ask yourself. And it's can John Dodson's speed save him here? It couldn't against Jimmy Rivera, which is why I mix those names up. But I also think Jimmy Rivera is faster than Peter Yan. So I think that Dodson's speed is going to serve him kind of well here. The thing you have to the other thing you have to ask yourself, so I guess two questions, is his suffocating pressuring style going to be too much? We saw John Dodson fare well against a relentless pressure in Pedro Munhoz, but obviously the boxing talent, the footwork is night and day, so that's not entirely comparable. He was able to move in and out at will. I think Dodson's going to do a better job of trying to wall him off. But I don't know. I think I sort of perennially underrate Peter Yan because he gets hit too much, I think, and I don't like the way he shells and backs up when he gets hit. Not that he can't counterpunch. He does that some too. And he's very tricky, switching stances and giving you different reads and throwing in combination. I do think that this fight is probably going to be like an ugly decision where not much happens. And so if you think Dodson can pick off a decision that way, I think maybe he's a good play at 6,900. He's definitely worth looking at because it's not that often where you get a fighter of this caliber at that price. But I just think Jan is going to probably wall him off and be a little too much. So I am picking Jan to win, but I wouldn't totally fade Dodson if you like a bunch of the 9,000-plus guys.
Joe, how about for you?
So you alluded to it, Sean. Like two slates ago, Dodson would probably be like north of 30% owned, dog, because, you know, there was nobody to back, you know, as a dog two slates ago. On this slate, you alluded to the line value elsewhere in the 7K range. So I don't think you need to go to Dodson here, you know, in cash or otherwise. I think there's other value that you could chase. As it relates to Peter Yan, I'm picking Yan to win, but I just see, you know, Dodson being on his bike the entire fight. And if Yan can't catch him, which, you know, at least for the first two rounds, maybe Dodson gets a little tired in the third round. It's going to be kind of an ugly fight. I mean, not very high scoring, and Yan is 9.3K. I think Yan is a much better bet here than a DraftKings play. I will have some shares of Yan. I'll have a few shares of Dodson, but I don't honestly think you need to play either one here. You know, there's plenty of value in the 9K range. There's plenty of odds value in the 7K range. If you're doing 150 in the mass entry, yeah, have some shares of each guy, but you don't need to be overexposed to either one of these fighters on this slate.
Yeah, I would agree with that. If anything, I probably would play a little bit of – I'm still considering Dodson in cash, but again, the odds value. I had to decide if I'm going to stick to my guns or go with some of the line value. We'll see. I would consider Dodson to play in cash and maybe one or two shares in my 20. I know you play like 100, 150 in my 20, one or two shares maybe of Peter Yan just for game theory. But again, I agree, not a really interesting DraftKings fight. Liz Carmouche, 8,300, taking on Lucy Pudilova at 7,900. Carmouche, -130. Pudilova, +120. Pudilova, the only Czech fighter on the card, defending home soil against Liz Carmouche, who is getting up there in fight years. She's a grappler. Pudilova, I think, can be taken down. Usually Pudilova is the stronger fighter, has the advantage in the clinch. She's not going to be stronger here. Liz Carmouche is crazy strong. Pudilova will have the advantage on the feet. Carmouche looking for takedowns. Striker versus grappler. I always lean towards the grappler in this one, but I don't think there's a high ceiling in this fight. This is more of either a cash fight if you have a strong opinion on it, or maybe for me, just a little bit of Liz Carmouche in tournaments. Not much beyond that for me, but Joe, you're the expert. What do you got?
Yeah, so Hudlova is who you want to win here, probably being the only local fighter on the card, 24 years old. I hope that when she loses, she will get another fight in the UFC. Carmouche, on the other hand, is a beast. Kind of getting up there in age, you know, making a run, obviously had previously fought at bantamweight, you know, making sort of that last run at 125. Actually, you know, her last fight against Jennifer Maia, who was fairly acclaimed in Invicta, was riding a, you know, pretty sizable win streak. I want to say she had won her last six fights in Invicta, and Carmouche won a unanimous decision at, you know, I think minus 135. I think just Carmouche is going to muscle her here. I don't know that she's going to allow the fight to remain standing. I do agree that I don't see the highest ceiling on this fight. If you want to have a few shares of either fighter in mass entries, fine. I just think there's more value elsewhere. As much as I want Pudlova to win, I remember that fight against the Elbow Princess, Landsberg. What a bloody, that was one of the bloodiest female fights I think I've ever seen. I think circa Penne, Joanna John Jacek might have been bloodier, but that was one hell of a bloody fight. So I'm going to pick Carmouche, although I'd like to see probably Pudlova win. I will have a few shares of each fighter, nothing much.
Chris, how about for you?
Well, and then she had a bloody fight with Irene Aldana, so there's blood all around.
Split decision, right, in that fight, yeah.
So, but I actually like Carmouche a little bit here. I think the reason why is Pudlova just sort of likes to chase you around with strikes and try to get in your face. And that's pretty much what Liz Carmouche needs, so she can body lock you and take you to the ground. And I think she's going to be able to do that pretty much whenever she wants. I also think that I think it needs to be said that Liz Carmouche is better on the feet than maybe some people give her credit for. We just think of her as a wrestler, but she's actually pretty light on her feet. She's pretty good defensively, and her hands are actually pretty quick. So if it has to be that, I think she could do okay in the striking. But I think the main factor here is just she's going to be coming forward, and she's going to give Liz Carmouche just plenty of grappling exchange opportunities. I hope she takes advantage of them. She does. I think the reason why she doesn't score as much is because sometimes she forgets that she should be going for the takedown. I hope it doesn't happen here. I hope she just tries to wrestle the whole fight. And I really think that this one should be hers.
All right, moving on. Mikhail Oleksyshuk, 8,900, taking on Jean Valente at 7,300. Oleksyshuk minus 185, comeback on Valente is plus 170. Somebody asked earlier in chat if I would rather play Oleksyshuk or Robertson in cash, and I snap answered Robertson, and it's because Jean Valente is the second underdog, and there's some foreshadowing for you. The second underdog I am picking, second and final underdog I am picking to win on this card.
Condolences.
Condolences is right.
Nope, we'll get there, guys. On this fight or the main?
This fight, man. This fight.
Look, you're gonna trust Mikhail Oleksyshuk, who is 1-0 in the UFC. His one win is to Khalil Roundtree Jr., who beat the ever living snot out of him until he gassed out, and then Mikhail took him down. Mikhail Oleksyshuk needs fights to get to the ground to win them. Jean Valente, despite being a big stupid, has 86% takedown defense. The worry with Jean Valente is that he takes one to give one. He's will tire towards the end of the fight, but I don't think Mikhail Oleksyshuk is any kind of great athlete, and he's coming off of a one-year USADA suspension. I think this fight should be pick'em, and then I would have a slight lean towards Valente. So I'm still picking him to win straight up, but at these odds and price, Valente, I don't see him getting finished by Mikhail Oleksyshuk. Maybe he gets robbed in a decision. He fights close constantly. I know his last win was a split decision against Ed Herman. Look, I just think people are overrating Mikhail Oleksyshuk here and are looking at Jean Valente and his past history. And I get that it's not good, but That doesn't mean the guy he's facing is going to win or is any good. So that's my cautionary tale there. I like Jean Valente, especially for the price. Chris, go ahead. You can berate me first.
I was so good during that. I didn't say a word, but now I'm going to I think first I have to give you some credit. I think the Big Stupid should be his actual nickname.
I love that nickname, the Big Stupid.
For that. But look, I don't think we are in love with Olin Jacek as much as we just got off of the train at Jean Valente station. I just think that's it. I think look, Jean Valente can't win that many fights at light heavyweight for the same reason a guy like what's his name, Justin Ledecky, can't, because all of these guys are going to be more athletic than him, basically. Unless he's fighting like Ed Herman or Sam Alvey, all these guys are going to be more athletic than him. Olin Jacek falls into that category. He's got way faster hands, which goes without saying. He's a good combination puncher. He was doing great body work against a guy like Roundtree.
And you understand, Roundtree was exhausted. Done.
Well, not for the first minute and a half of every round he wasn't. And, you know, he faded that out. And you got to understand that a guy like Khalil Roundtree, he's got his issues, which is like he gets really tired. But until he gets tired, he's really athletic and really powerful. And probably more so than Jean Valente in either department, although the power might be close. But if he could weather that storm, I really see him not really having that many problems with Valente. The one thing I did see for Valente was that I noticed on tape that Olin Jacek doesn't really fight that well when he has to back up. So that was the one thing where I was like, well, maybe. But I still can't trust Valente to do anything about it because he just fights in these predictable patterns, like one twos and overhands. Occasionally he'll throw like a leg kick or something. And it's all just so slow. I mean, look, I understand it to an extent, but I just can't do it. I got to pick Olin Jacek here.
Good. I'll be all alone on the Jean Valente train this week. And I've badmouthed him plenty, including when I was picking him. So we'll see. Well, I'm going to be alone. So if he wins, I'm going to have a very good week. And you know what? Sometimes you got to take a stand. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But
quite a stand, my friend.
Joe?
Okay, so
bravery.
Where I will agree is I'm not sure I get the line of minus 195, especially coming off of a one-year suspension. Look, he is only 24 years old. I would have loved to have seen him use that time to maybe, you know, go to a better camp. But I see this fight as basically a toss-up. I'm not going to be heavy on either guy. You know, Valente's had his moments. You know, he has just got leagues more experience than McCall. And, you know, that could mean something in a fight like this. Although, you know, Valente is 33 years old. And as my dad would say, it's time to shit or get off the pot. He needs a win here. You know, I can't believe how long he's been in, you know, both the UFC and Strikeforce. I mean, he's got fights going way back. Valente. So, and he's always been billed as the athlete because I guess he played lacrosse or something.
Didn't he play football at Hofstra?
He's a wrestler too.
I thought he played lacrosse. Anyway. So I am going to give a slight nod to Mikhail, but it's not a minus 195 fight. You know, I will have my shares of him, but I don't love him.
I have a question for the group, if I may. What does Jean Valente do well?
Nothing.
Right. No. Well, I'm asking Sean, really, I guess.
I mean, he does nothing well. It's just other guy.
He does one thing really, really well. He has really good takedown defense.
Okay. He gets tired while he's defending takedowns.
Yeah.
But he defends at 86%, and Corey Anderson didn't take him down for three rounds. You're going to tell me he doesn't have good takedown defense?
Okay.
So disagree, but you know I'm right here.
I mean, I don't know why you're leaning so heavy on that this dude needs takedowns. I mean, you saw – I mean, would you agree with me that he's a diverse striker who's quick? Like, why would
I don't think he's that quick. I don't think he's that quick.
Is he quicker than Jean Valente?
Probably.
Oh, come on.
Hand speed, probably. And foot speed. He's probably faster. But
okay, thank you.
So in summary, Sean's got Valente.
I'm getting nervous.
Chris has got the other guy, and I'm kind of on the fence with a lean.
If you're going to play Oleg Jacek at that price, I think you're crazy.
I'm not going that far. I'm just saying, I mean, maybe leave it alone if
the
you want.
Price per dollar, Vellante's the better play. And someone in chat, Michael Iannone, Matt Sarah, I'm reading this live. I haven't read this before. Matt Sarah, Jean Vellante is awesome on the ground, but he refuses to shoot takedowns because he wants knockouts. Yeah, so he proves my point. He's a big dum-dum. I'm still picking him.
Hey, I said yeah, I love guys. The nickname. If you want to do that, I'll get behind you on that all day long. We could.
Yeah, the big dum-dum. I love it.
All right, let's talk about the co-main event, which is – how is this the co-main event? How is Peter Yan, John Dodson not the main event?
I don't know, dude. Or yeah, co-main they event. Probably see this as finishing. That's probably why.
Stefan Struve, 7,800. Marcos Ruggiero de Lima, 8,400.
Line flip.
Has it flipped?
Yep.
Yeah, Stefan Struve, minus 110. Marcos Ruggiero de Lima, plus 100. Stefan Struve, 0-3 in his last three, but it's Arlovski, Volkov, Tybura. Was taken down a bunch, and Marcos Ruggiero de Lima only seems to beat guys like Jeremy Kimball. And the last one was Adam Wojcik. Look, it's how done is Stefan Struve. This fight is, for me, it's GPP. I don't care about the odds value here. It's a GPP fight. And honestly, neither one of these guys strike me as quick finishers. So I might not be – I'm not 100% exposed to it. Give me Ruggiero de Lima for the takedowns and Struve not finding a sub. But anything happening in this heavyweight fight really wouldn't surprise me. De Lima's my pick, but whatever on it. Joe?
Yeah, I mean, so de Lima was this guy who could never make light heavyweight, 205. So his first fight – at heavyweight, they make him move up to heavyweight, and he comes in at 253. so obviously, I haven't seen weigh-ins yet. I like to see how he looked. Struve is this guy that has never learned to fight big. He's 7 feet tall, always has a reach advantage over whoever he fights. This is a guy who knocked out Stipe Miocic. I mean, that's what this guy's pedigree looks like. He is also an extremely nervous and anxious fighter. I mean, he's had panic attacks. He's had to have a fight called off the day of because of a panic attack. He's known for throwing up in the locker room, right? So this guy's got all kinds of issues. This is a good fight for him. I could certainly see him after the guys that he's fought, if he is still vested, he's only 31 years old. If he's still vested and is looking to actually continue fighting, I believe this is the last fight on his UFC contract. So if he's going to go elsewhere or try to get re-signed, but, this is a very winnable fight for him. With that said, if he is just fighting out his contract, I could certainly see De Lima catching him. Although the quality of competition that De Lima has beaten is not great. I don't think he's a great overall fighter. It's just there's so little depth at heavyweight that, they'll probably keep him around for a while. So initially I was kind of on De Lima, and now I'm kind of flip-flopping back and forth. I really do see the line value at 7.8K, and I do see that this is a fight that Struve could potentially win. So even though, I didn't officially pick De Lima anywhere, I'm going to take Struve here. I like him on DraftKings at 7.8K. I would certainly not invest a lot in him. I think he might be a better DraftKings play than a bet. But 7.8K, yeah, give me some shares. Give me shares at De Lima. I'm going to be pretty equally exposed to each fighter, maybe have more of Struve because of the line value and the salary. But I am going to pick the upset here, and the skyscraper gets a W.
Chris?
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you, Sean, off the bat, that I actually think this is a good fight to finish just based on the fact that most
early time, finish, quick finish.
Well, most of the time when these dudes win, they finish, and most of the time when they lose, they don't, or get finished, I should say. The reason why, like, this fight to me is so weird, and I was going back and forth on it. I almost wanted to pick Struve because he, for some reason, which I don't know why, he actually showed a lot of promising things in that last fight. He was finally working behind the jab, which is the first time I've ever seen him do that. He was using his front kicks up the middle a lot. He actually caught Marcin Tybura with a front kick to the face and, just couldn't capitalize because Tybura had a reactive double off of it. But he was doing some good things. The reason why I'm ultimately going to be picking De Lima here is because his game just looked way more put together in that fight against Adam Wojnarowski. Like, yeah, pressure, throw those hammer leg kicks, wing the hooks, or try to pressure and counter it and wing the hooks out. I mean, I am really pretty nervous about the fact that if he goes for a takedown, he will get lazy and just sort of fall into Screw's guard and get triangled or something. You have to remember, this is not only a guy in De Lima who was Von Fluchok by OSP, but also allowed himself to be guillotined by Antigulov when he could basically have just stepped over into side control whenever he wanted, allowed Antigulov to wrap up the guard, and then didn't fight the hands and just tapped. It was pretty baffling. So you have to be weary, that is, of De Lima just being weird and not doing the things he's supposed to, not showing a lot of urgency. But I think his game is put together a little bit better, and so I have to pick him, but this is a tough one to get.
All right, let's go on to our main event. Thiago Santos, 8,500, taking on Jan Blachowicz, 7,700. And here's another big odds value spot, as the line is actually flipped now. It's not -110 apiece. It is Jan Blachowicz -110, Thiago Santos +100, which is annoying to me because I have bet Thiago Santos in this spot. I am not on the Jan Blachowicz train. I am jumping off. I have been on it for the longest time. Everyone else seems to be joining me. I cashed as an underdog against Jimmy Manoa and in other spots in his little run here. He's back on the juice, by the way, for sure. Thiago Santos has looked like a different guy since going to 205, as many people do. Good volume, gets in wars. Those leg kicks are, you know, we all know they are devastating. Probably the best, not leg kicks, but best body kick, high kick in mixed martial arts, I think, goes to Thiago Santos. It's just so damn powerful. I don't think Jan Blachowicz will have enough to take him down and hold him there, which is his path to victory. Santos, though, if this fight gets into late round 3, 4, 5, it will go towards Jan Blachowicz. I don't mind stacking this fight in cash. I think the odds value pushes everybody towards Blachowicz, and I like Santos to win, so I will be heavier on Thiago Santos. I think eventually he is going to catch Blachowicz moving in for a takedown and finish him. Chris, main event time. Take us home.
Yeah, I like Santos quite a bit in this spot, and the reason is because I think, look, we've seen Blachowicz in his last couple of fights really sort of transform himself by being just like a steady boxer who works behind a jab and can counter some. But I think giving Thiago Santos a slow kickboxing match where he can stand at range is pretty much the worst thing you can possibly do. I think he's going to get lit up by kicks, and he's going to really have to – like, there's no such thing as fighting a slow-paced fight against Thiago Santos. You're going to have to fight to his pace. And Blachowicz has been better about his gas tank because he's been fighting more measured. I don't think he's going to be able to do that here. I think he's going to get tired. And as far as the wrestling goes, yeah, he could use it. But Thiago Santos has very underrated jiu-jitsu. He's underrated at hitting sweeps. And getting back to his feet, because he's such a dynamo on the feet. I just think that this is a pretty nice matchup for a guy like Santos. He could obviously, you know, eat a counter. That's always the worry in a Santos fight. But as safe Thiago Santos fights go, and I know that's a pretty loaded sentence, but as they go, I think this is a pretty good one. So I'm picking Santos.
Joe, I'm assuming you're with just your sound effects, you're with the side of this hype train here. So tell us why the mass is like.
Oh, I'm on a hype train. I mean, I've been on Jan, you know, all week. I mean, I bet him in the parlay with CDF.
So you can be on the leader of the hype train.
I like Jan. I mean, I was on him against Krylov. I was on him against Clark. I was on him against Manoa. I see this as a, absent the leg kicks, of course, I see this as a similar fight to Manoa. You know, going against a striker, he dominated him for 3 rounds. I don't necessarily see him getting the finish, but I do see him kind of grinding out a decision. I do like the odds value here. I will have shares of Santos as well. I'm not surprised that the line flipped. I think there's some great value here at 7.7K. I am going to pick Jan. I don't think that Santos is the guy that, you know, derails his recent resurgence here. This is essentially a home fight for him. You know, Santos flying to the Czech Republic from Brazil. You know, I guess Jan could probably take a train to get to the Czech Republic from Poland. I am on Jan here, and now is a good time for me to actually give my take that I alluded to, or my something I haven't seen since I started playing
DFS. There are people here just for this.
I know there are. Okay, so here's what I have never seen before. At current odds, there are, and you alluded to it, Sean, like, oh, I bet you're going to say that you could play a lineup with six favorites. You can play 192 lineups with only betting line favorites in them. I have never seen anything close to that in all my years of playing DFS MMA. There are 192 lineups.
Are you going to play 150 of them?
No. I mean, there are people out there who play DFS MMA that are pure odds-driven players. And if it comes out that, you know, six betting line favorites win, irrespective of what their DraftKings salaries are, it's going to be a bloodbath in terms of ties and, you know, divvying up pots. So, no. I mean, game theory suggests that you shouldn't go all out and do that. I mean, you know, the most you could play is, to your point, is 150 of those lineups. And I would not advise coming close to that for a lot of reasons. But I have never seen a slate where you could play 192 lineups solely with betting line favorites.
All right. So that wraps up the analysis for UFC Prague. Let's go to hot takes. I'll give mine first, because I've had it queued up this whole time. Joe, who are the two biggest odds value, line value plays in the card?
Obviously, Demir. That's number one, because he's 7.4K and he's a betting line favorite. So that's one. And then it's probably between, I guess, Struve and Jan.
I think it's Jan. Well, yeah, it's got to be Jan because they're both the same odds to win, and Jan is cheaper.
Yeah.
So those two, they both get finished.
Whoa.
That's the hot take.
That is a hot take. Chris?
Well, I think I might have to change because Otto said it in the chat first, and now David is telling me that I got to pick a new one. So. Wait, can we go to Joe first and come back to me?
I'm still formulating mine, so we might. Sean might have to kill some time here.
Another one.
Let's see.
Another hot take. Let's see. For another one, I will say that how about Stefan Struve, Marcos Ruggiero de Lima, see a third round.
Ooh, that is a hot take.
And then I think the fight ends in that third round. By the way. But I think we get to a third there. All right, I've given you guys two hot takes, two steamy hot takes.
Okay, so here's my hot take. I've been pretty good giving people parlays. You know, so here is my parlay. I want you guys to play Struve by submission. Struve wins by submission. Okay, that's part one of my hot take. And then I want you to play that with trying to find a little value here. Let's go with Ankalaev by KO. So let's go with Struve by submission and Ankalaev by KO parlay. That should pay pretty decently.
Yep, I can get behind that as a hot take. All right, Chris, no more stalling. What do you got?
All right, well, it was going to be that Macedo guard subs Jillian Robertson, but Otto said it in chat like right before I did. So,
come on, I got to go eat dinner. Let's go.
I know, but I have another one.
Well, you could take that because Otto is not yet on our staff, so you could certainly.
That's true, but you know, I'm getting guff in the chat over it, so I don't know.
Guff. Wow, you used the word guff.
Yeah. Well, you got to keep it clean. You know, it's a family. Okay.
It's a family show.
I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I got to stick with it. I don't have another one on the.
Okay. Ready. So you're gonna have Masato by
guard subs, and it's got to be a guard sub. That'll be the hotness of it. Okay. Got to be a guard sub or it doesn't play. How about okay. that?
It's not cheating, Zelda. How about this? Go one step further. Pick a sub.
Oh, pick a sub. All right. She gets okay.
Armbar.
No. She gets some kind of leg lock, either a knee bar or a heel hook.
Okay. Really? Girls don't typically win that way.
Winner by heel hook counts. Zelda, I am overriding your booze here. We will have it. That's what we got for UFC Pro. Guys, make sure and subscribe to the RotoWire MMA podcast. Subscribe on iTunes and here on YouTube if you are watching live. RotoWire.com/free, 10-day free trial. Check out all the premium content. No credit card required. Give us a follow on Twitter. I'm at the DF Sniper. Chris is at Real Chris Olsen. Joe is at Sun Tzu. We will see you next week, guys. I'll be
in Vegas, right?
The card is the card in Vegas?
Isn't it? I mean, isn't next week DraftKings already has a contest out for it.
Yeah, I'll be in Vegas Sunday to Wednesday. I'm coming home Wednesday morning. So got any hot spots or tips for me? Give me a shout on Twitter. And I'd be happy to hear them and enjoy the fights this week, guys. Good luck in your contest.
Sounds good.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.